Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We're going to be talking about the Erik and Karlsson trade. Kings have no place to, we don't have any place to watch them on TV. And we're going to be breaking down the first line and the first pairing, where they failed last year, where they were successful, and how they can get better. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Hey, let's go. Well, guys, we are back after a week off. As you can tell, I'm at the helm of this ship from a different location. I got a desk for the first time in 2 years to actually do something here. So we're moving on up here at Hockey Royalty. So congratulations to the captain of the ship right now. But wouldn't be nothing about it without my seamates here, the guys that hold this this fortress down that we call Hockey Royalty, Mr. Russell Morgan and Joe Paterino. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Just a little over a month, maybe 5 or 6 weeks away from training camp. It's getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah, I'm ready to go, but to kind of bide my time and get me through up until then. We've got the Everton quarter zip on right here. They start Saturday morning, Premier League. Here we go. They were painfully close to getting relegated last season. So hopefully be in a little bit of a better spot this season.
Just to kind of from here. quick EPL corner here. What's this news I hear about Harry Kane leaving Tottenham?
So that came this morning. It's been kind of rumored. Kane's been rumored out for a little while now. I think Manchester United might have been poking around at one point, and this morning it came that there was the agreement between the two teams. I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, you can just legit buy players in soccer.
The transfer windows are insane.
There's no, you could just, if you submit an offer to any for a player and the team's like, well, we don't value him that high. Here, take him. And we'll just reinvest that money elsewhere.
Offer sheets are not extinct over there.
No, that's like all they are is offer sheets. It's crazy. So there was a rumor this morning though that he was unsure if he was going to actually go. He's been at Tottenham forever, his whole career. And now it looks like he's going to do it, which is huge. I mean, he's been at Tottenham forever, and they just don't ever win anything, despite being a very competitive team all the time. But he'll definitely win some stuff at Bayern Munich, that's for sure.
I don't follow too much Premier League, but when it's on early in the morning, when I wake up, have my coffee, especially right before like Sunday football, it's always
pop
nice
it on, pop it on, just and just see like, you know. Find a team because this will be my ninth year following Everton. I mean, I was a fan of soccer, but I never understood. I didn't know when the league started. And then when NBC got it, it was like, okay, now let me try to get this and figure this out. And a buddy of mine, we became Everton. We decided Everton was going to be the team that we were going to support. And it's incredible. Like you are, it just sucks you right in. And for those 2 hours watching that game, I'm watching Welcome to Wrexham with my wife right now. And she's like, I said, I told you every game is a heart attack. I mean, it's what I love about it is like every goal matters because there's not that many in the game. So the ebbs and flows, the emotion, the goals and stoppage time, like it is, I love it. I'm a huge fan of it. And I'm fired up for the season to start this weekend.
Nice.
It's pretty crazy. Richie Rich comes in here with, can players reject the transfer? I know Mbappe just rejected the transfer to the Saudi Arabian team. They were going to pay him, they were going to pay
nuts
$336 million just for his rights, and then another $776 for one year.
Yeah, I mean, it is. The money for some of those guys is just crazy. And again, obviously, so that's them paying the team, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll work on a contract with – I always laugh. And so the buddy of mine that I watch these games with usually – contracts are meaningless. They show the picture of him signing the deal, takes the picture of the camera, signed a 5-year extension. He could be sold in 2 years. It means absolutely nothing. Nothing. It is hilarious, but it's the wild, wild west when it's the transfer window. It's crazy.
Just one last thing on our little soccer talk here is I saw a rumor that Neymar might be coming to the MLS and more specifically to Los Angeles, one of the LA teams, which would be
something. Yeah.
Isn't he still in his prime though? Like he's like 27, 28, isn't he?
I think he's older. Up there. I think he's probably in his 30s, I want to say. I'm not exactly sure, but I mean, he's not like Messi or Ronaldo, I think, of age, but
he's 31. Yeah.
Definitely still got some prime legs and
for sure. That would be, yeah. I mean, and we've seen what Messi's been able to do.
Messi's already fourth all time on Miami's scoring list, and he's been there a week.
The dude's a freak. He's a freak.
That's been fun.
Let's get it. Thank you guys for coming in here. Lee coming in here with a hey y'all. We got Topanga with hey yo Kyle with the Go Kings Go. Another Lee. You got an impersonator or imposter there. Richie Rich, my dudes. Kings Rule. I'm late for a very important date. Glad you could make it in here. Good to see you guys. Let's get into it. We're talking about the Erik and Karlsson trade first, obviously, with leaving the Pacific. And then one of the biggest GM moves of this offseason, Dubas going to Pittsburgh, didn't waste any time bringing somebody over and making some moves for this one here. So in a three-way, debacle here, the Penguins are adding Karlsson, Ford, Reem Pitlick from Montreal, minor leaguer Dylan Hameluk, and a 2026 third rounder from San Jose. Sharks receive Ford Mike Hoffman from the Canadiens, Ford Mikael Grunlund, defenseman Jan Ruta, and a 2024 first-round pick from the Penguins. Canadians get a 25-second goalie Casey DeSmith for Nathan Laguerre, and bringing back defenseman Jeff Petrie from the Penguins. The trade also has the Sharks retaining 1.5 of worth of Karlsson's salary, and the Penguins taking 25% of Petrie's contract to make all the money balance out. Obviously, that was the biggest player to be traded this offseason. We knew it was going to be hard going or hard sledding because of the salary, but unlike the Cal Peterson trade, Norris Trophy winner is a little bit easier to stomach if you're absorbing that salary. What did you think of the trade overall? How do you think our rivals up north did? I'll start with you, Joe.
I think the rivals up north did terrible. I thought this was a great trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins because, listen, their window is still cracked open because they have Crosby, Malkin, Letang playing at the levels that they're playing at. It doesn't matter what happens in 2, 3, 4 years. This team is going to go through a painful rebuild, I'm sure. But you had to swing big because you had what else are you going to do? You can't try to like build around Crosby and Malkin and Letang to try to build for the future. I was shocked they even kept this year's first round pick. Like, just go for it. Now, I don't know that this necessarily makes them a cup contender in the East. It's a really tough conference still, and I don't think they're quite as good as some of the other teams in the East, even with Karlsson. But you got to do it. You have to take a run here. They gave up nothing, right? I mean, they gave up a protected first round pick. I mean, listen, it's a tough spot. I don't know how much San Jose was ever going to actually get in return for Karlsson. With his contract, it's a really difficult thing. But unless this is an ownership thing, how Mike Greer isn't eating as much as he possibly 50. Can of that contract, the 50%, I don't understand it, because you got a protected first, which is going to be mid to late round, perhaps. This was your chance to cash in. Now, maybe the market was what it was, and there just wasn't as much there as would seem to be. But I got to imagine if you're eating 50%, you can get either maybe an additional pick, maybe a prospect of some relevance. I don't know. Like the Sharks, I guess in some ways you could say, listen, at least the contract's off the books and they can kind of move on. Mostly off the books, you can kind of move on. But the salary cap for them is irrelevant the next, probably for the duration of Carlson, what his contract would be. So what they're eating anyway. So I don't know. I didn't love the return. I acknowledge it was probably an extremely difficult deal to make, but not a great return.
Yeah, everything you said, Joe, I totally agree with. I mean, it's weird because I think we talked about this when Dubas actually got the job in Pittsburgh. Like, why would he take that kind of job when we kind of see the sunset on the horizon, right? I mean, there's only, what, 3-4 years left in Crosby and Malkin and probably the Tang as well. So that was always kind of surprising, but this trade makes that all makes sense, right? And this is the reason why he took this kind of job, because he sees that potential in winning. But it's also funny because, I mean, I think we talked about someone trying to trade for Erik Karlsson a few months ago, right around the start of the offseason. And I think I had mentioned, like, any team that trades for Erik Karlsson is going to lose the trade. But out of probably any team in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins are probably the only team that I'm okay with making this type of move because of what you said with Crosby heading toward the end of his career. They only have this really short window in time in terms that they can win. And when you add a player like Karlsson, yeah, his contract is what it is. You think they're paying him $10 million over the next 4 years. I mean, you're still getting a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. I mean, you could debate whether he's a Norris Trophy defenseman, whether he doesn't really play the two-way game. But, I mean, when you have that offensive firepower and that power play that they're going to have, it's going to be ridiculous. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I feel like, should shoot up to be that one of the main contenders in the Eastern Conference. I know that division, though, is still going to be pretty tough. And the Eastern Conference whole is still going to be for them to navigate.
Yeah, no.
This definitely makes it better, right? But for San Jose, I'm with you. Like, I saw the rumors of people saying, like, oh, the owner didn't want to eat more money, so they can only do the 1.5 mil per year. And that's all the owner was willing to do. But, dude, like, that's the owner shooting his own team in the foot. Yes. Like, you have to do whatever you can to maximize this value for Erik Karlsson as high as you can. Because it'll never be this high, ever. He's just coming off a Norris Trophy season, 100-point season. Erik Karlsson's value is never going to be higher than it is right now. And for them to only get a first-round pick, I mean, people were saying, oh, they'll be able to flip the other players for – like, what are you going to get for Jan Ruda and Mike Hoffman and Mikael Granlund, especially with what Mikael Granlund's making? Nobody's going to trade meaningful picks or prospects.
Ron Hextall's not a GM anymore.
Yeah, so you're only getting, like, maybe the 25th overall pick in a draft. Why? Why? I don't know. Like I agree with you, Joe. Like, the Sharks had to do – or they had to eat as much of the contract to maximize the value in the deal. And for them to only take on 1.5 mil, they're not going to be good for probably 4 or 5 years, maybe even if that. You kind of look at their prospect pool. Eklund is good. Who'd they get this draft? They got
Will Smith.
Was it Will Smith? Will Smith, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Will Smith's going to be pretty good, but they didn't really have like a cornerstone type of prospect in their system yet. And even like, trading away Brent Burns from a couple years ago, they didn't get much from him. And you can argue whether that contract was too much to handle, but it seems like the Sharks are just, I tweeted out, they're navigating a terrible rebuild right now. And there's really, it seems like there's no end to it. And as a Kings fan, I'm totally fine with it because it seems like they're going to be in purgatory up there in the Shark Tank for quite a while.
I like Will Smith and I do like William Eklund. I think they'll be a nice pair. William Eklund can play on the wing. Will Smith was the fourth overall pick. I mean, he's just as much promise as Alex Turcotte does, played very well for Team USA. So I feel like they got a couple good picks the last couple of years that can be that cornerstone. But you're looking at the Kings, right? We have like four cornerstone pieces. You had the Villari, the Byfield, Clark, Turcotte, before we really started moving forward. And then there was a plethora of that second to fourth round range as well. I know that the Sharks have those players, the Bortolos and all those guys. I think Owen something, they got the last pick of the first round a couple years ago. So I know they have a lot of those mid-range guys, but you need like the three or four top-range guys as well. And you feel like you could have got more, you should have got more from Carlson. Now, like the teams you're trading with, like Pittsburgh has zero prospects, right? Like they've been trading away. Mm-hmm. So like what was in their pantry that they were willing to give up outside of multiple picks? I mean, they probably could have got a fourth and a 24th and a 25th. Montreal isn't looking to give up any of their prospects. They've said that multiple times. So the teams that were willing to play ball in this trade weren't really the ideal partners for them and for the Sharks for the rebuild. And so at that point, do you risk not being able to trade away Carlson if he, you know, breaks his femur this year, like he's been injured in the past, or do you just move on and take what you think you can get? You know, it's the same thing that you find in a lot of other things with, you know, I've been, 19 fantasy football leagues now. It's like the dynasty trades, right? You know, it's like do you take the value that you're comfortable with, or do you assume that there's better value on the horizon? And I think they probably just took the value they're comfortable with.
The deal had to be done now, you know, and I see King's Rule in the comments, and appreciate you listening and commenting, King's Rule, that they said, I think you could have kept him until next year. I just think that's too risky. I think that, as you mentioned, Brandon, he's had a history of being injured, and you're just not, he's not going to have 100 points. Oh, well, maybe in Pittsburgh he will. We wasn't going to have another 100-point season in San Jose. So I just think that they had to do it this year. I agree that probably not the best suitors, but tough to move that contract. That they say, can I pivot a little bit? It's related, yeah. But I saw some stuff about on Twitter, and I don't remember offhand who, it doesn't really matter. People are like, oh man, we feel bad for Carlson. We got to get him out of that crap organization, get him into a winning organization, get him to a winning team. I'm like, he signed the deal. He has yet to make, that team has yet to make the playoffs with Carlson. It's like, well, I'm not going to feel sorry for the guy. He had bad injuries. San Jose, I remember when the deal was made. It's like, this isn't hard to see this being a great deal financially for Carlson, but a terrible deal for both of them on the ice because the Sharks were going the total wrong direction. They signed him to a massive deal. The Sharks, obviously, not a shock at all that halfway through it, they're looking to get rid of him because it's now become a burden, and he's disappointed because the team stinks. Like, I'm not going to feel sorry for these guys that sign these contracts. And it's like all of a sudden, wow, the team can't find a way to deal him because his contract sucks. Hey, you both signed the thing. And if you or your agent couldn't let you know, like, hey, the Sharks team's kind of going in the wrong direction, it ain't their problem. I just saw that. I was like, what are we doing here?
It's almost like the same as when the Kings signed Kovalchuk, but with like, when the Sharks signed Carlson, it was like 10 times the risk. I mean, When the Kings were signing Kovalchuk, it's like, okay, we're going to take one less throw of the dart at the dartboard and see if maybe we can get something out of it. Right. Because we all knew like the end of the road was coming.
9-year deal.
Deal. Carlson, like, it's funny you mentioned it. It's like, I remember where I was when I saw the Carlson contract come in. And I was like, immediately thought, he won't finish in San Jose.
Horrible.
He'll never end
great.
Up yeah. finishing
great, contract. Great for him, like in his bank account, like his financial security, like get your money, man. I'm not by all means, but he had the interview in Sweden or whatever. It's like, hey, we're not feeling sorry for you right now. You signed the deal. And if they can't move you because your contract sucks, that is what it is. And I'll say, like, going back to now bringing it back to the trade, there's a level of risk here for Pittsburgh, which, again, I don't think it matters. I think they needed to do this deal because you got to take a shot while you can. There's a scenario where Carlson's hurt, Malkin's hurt, Letang's hurt, either all together or at various points this season, and it just derails the team. Jari's had some injury problems before. So, like, there's definitely a scenario where this goes sideways on Pittsburgh, but I genuinely don't think that matters. As you mentioned, Brandon, their prospect pool isn't very good. They're in total win-now mode, so it doesn't really matter. But
it seems like all those careers are going to end at similar times to where they're probably going to do a tear-it-down-to-the-studs rebuild.
Exactly.
And not like a retool, you know?
Yep. That'll be a blow-up, a rebuild, and... Yep.
I mean, you think about it too. You're going even going back further to when Ottawa traded Carlson to San Jose. I mean, they did so well there. I mean, you look at some of the players they got out of that trade.
Which say that again? Josh,
when Ottawa traded what they got in return for Carlson?
Yes.
Huge.
Yes.
Josh Norris and the pick that was eventually Tim Stützle.
Yes.
Senators did an extremely good job trading away Carlson at the time they did.
So Amin the Dream right here coming in. He does a lot of Niners stuff. He's one of my Niners buddies. Just trying to get him into hockey so he's not familiar with kind of how the trades work and compared to football and the players that you're getting in return. But he says, I'm a Sharks fan. I don't know hockey very heavily, but please educate me. Did the Sharks get good value in the return or did they get fleeced? And I don't think this is a situation of getting fleeced or not getting fleeced. I think this is a desperation trade that the Sharks needed to make. And they got the value that they could. Do we think they could have got more in return for the best defenseman in the NHL, you know, considering the trophy that he got last year, according to all the awards? Yeah, I think we could have, but it's the trade they needed to make. There was probably limited partners, and therefore you can't always ask for the moon.
And now maybe, so they didn't eat much of the contract. So I'm in the Dream. You can eat, a team can eat up to 50% of a player's salary in a trade. So that eases the burden on the salary cap for the player, for the team he's going to. If they did that, could that have opened up other teams to be in this mix? I mean, if it's true that the owner was like, hey, not doing that, well, you know, then it is what it is. But if he was willing to do that, you wonder if that would have opened up more more avenues or more trade options. But I agree that I wouldn't say they got fleeced just because they were probably kind of stuck. If they weren't allowed to eat four, weren't going to eat the full amount of 50%, but the return wasn't good.
Let's get into this next one here. The Bally's, right? Kings broadcast, right? Bally's is no longer, they're filing bankruptcy. They're on the outs. Kings don't have a place to watch TV going into next year, unless you're here in Texas and can watch ESPN Plus. But the broadcast rights for all you locals out there, still undetermined. What are the Kings going to do? Where is there any avenues? Russ, I'm definitely going to start with you because you are the local in this trio. What is the buzz around town? Is there any, you know, close deals being made or what's going on here? And where's your first choice if there isn't anything poking around?
Yeah, I mean, right now, if the season started tomorrow, and locally, we'd have nowhere to watch the team as far as nothing's been announced yet. I reached out to the team just about a week ago, and they weren't able to give me any updates. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, I guess, at this point. We do have the broadcasters, obviously, in terms of having Jim Fox, Nick Nixon, and Daryl Evans as the simulcast that'll be on radio, which will more than likely be iHeartRadio. But as far as the TV rights, I mean, it's just up in the air at this point. And I wonder if the Kings aren't the only team, not only in the NHL, but you look at the NBA, MLB. I mean, there's a ton of teams that are kind of going through this right now, this situation with Bally's. And we've seen other teams, like I think the Vegas Golden Knights obviously are one that they signed with Scripps, which is, well, they'll be broadcasting all their games locally for free, which is pretty cool concept if you're a fan of the sport, especially in Vegas, for just winning, getting all the games on TV for free. I'm sure they're going to be pretty happy there. So I don't know. I mean, as a Kings fan, I think they can go either number of ways. And I've tried to talk to people to see like what they kind of get there or what their vibe is on the whole thing. And I mean, I'd love to see them on local channels. I think that'd be pretty cool. Maybe out here we have KCAL 9, KTLA. KCAL 9 used to broadcast a lot of Dodger games back in the day, a lot of Laker games back in the day. So maybe they can go that route. But I think with the day and age we're in now, I think the safer bet would probably be like more of a streaming platform, whether they want to partner with like a Hulu or Apple TV, or maybe they make their own little streaming platform in terms of having like a Kings app. And I wanted to ask you guys in terms of this, like, start with you, Joe, like let's say the Kings did offer like a streaming app of their own, like the LA Kings app. You can watch every game, whatever, highlights, interviews, all that good stuff. What would be like the max that you would pay per year for that situation? Would it be $100? Would it be $50?
For the year?
What number would you have to sit at?
I mean, I'd probably pay $100 a year for that. It's tough because I have ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. I can very easily watch the games. Maybe it's not their broadcast, but that's not the end of the world. Sometimes I like to listen to other teams' broadcast anyways, just because I so often hear the Kings that I like to get the other perspective on how they view the team.
Yeah,
So, but because I'm a Kings fan, and I assume that there'd be more, maybe some sort of content perhaps tied to it. I'd say probably $100, but even then it's like, do I even have to do this when I can just watch ESPN Plus? You know, yeah. I don't know.
How about you, Renan? You're kind of in the same boat though, too, because you're in Dallas, right?
I think Brandon's on mute.
I think the streaming platform is interesting, and we were talking about it a little earlier, like they own the Galaxy as well, you know, and they play at different parts of the year. I think they could probably start just their own network that you could stream both teams on. You pay, you know, what is it, $8 a month, $10 a month, something like that for that service. It's 12. It's out all year round. You're getting both the soccer team and the Kings team. And then during the off season, if they capitalize the streaming, right? Like if they streamed the rookie face off, they streamed, you know, rookie camp. They did a PR of the draft, like even though we had a third round pick, like if you could watch the draft, like all the snippets of the players, us interviewing the players, all that kind of stuff like that, that would be like people that are going like a deep dive, like that would be great, you know, like they make a 2 minute clip of the guys playing beach volleyball. But what if that's like a 10 minute episode or like, it's like a weekly episode, like you get Game of Thrones or anything like this, but it's like around the Kings or around the round table or something like that, where every week that they do like a little 10 minute episode about another player and their life, almost like the quarterback documentary. Like, I feel like there's so much more out there that you could do with your own streaming app. And you have college teams that have the Longhorn Network that have all kinds of stuff that you could have. Yeah. Add the rain games. I mean, I know AHL probably has a contract with AHL TV, but still it's like you have the Longhorn Network. You have a lot of these other teams in college football. Yeah. They're making millions of dollars because college football is a business, but like, why can't the Kings do that? Especially since they're making not only money with the Kings, but with, you know, with the LAFC. And then, you know, I'm sure they probably could get, with us being hockey fanatics, I'm sure they probably could stream some of the Ice Bear games in Germany and fans would watch. Like, I just, you know, and I just think that it would be an easy thing. I would say anywhere between, if they did a deal, I bet you if they did a deal, like you could do one team, you get only Kings access and it's $12. Or if you get both teams, it's $15. Right, like into where like you get, it's an incentive to get both. You have a chance for them to learn to love hockey or soccer and go to those games. And then if you get the both option, you get bonus content for both teams. Where if you just buy the one team, you get just the games. Right, like they make it incentivized to get both. I just think there's so much more potential there in a grand scheming thing where like people aren't thinking outside the box. I mean, like, in today's day and age, there's freaking AI that you can plan your entire vacation around and they do everything for you. And we can't get a streaming platform for a professional team. Like, it makes zero sense to me.
Well, the whole like TV industry is miserable. I mean, I've got cable locally here, but on top of that, in order to watch, if you're a sports fan and you want to watch hockey, like you need ESPN Plus. If you want to watch soccer, if you want to watch Premier League, you need Peacock. So I got to get Peacock. I got Hulu. I've got Paramount.
Apple Plus, like for soccer, right? MLS.
Apple, right. I got Apple. I've got Paramount, which is where Serie A is in Italy. Like, there's all these different, and I'm missing Netflix. Everybody has Netflix. It's like, this is getting... I need two hands just to count all these. And I guess I'm sounding like an old man now, but like it got to the point where like we needed to cut the cord, which I haven't even done. Like I said, I still have cable because otherwise I couldn't watch the Yankees because they're blacked out on any streaming service if I wanted to do that. So to watch the Yankees, it's a mess. So at some point it'd be nice to get something a little bit more streamlined anyways across the board, Randon, but you're right. I mean, with the Kings and hockey in general, it's become a problem.
Yeah, just kind of I don't know if you guys know out here, it's so we have Spectrum out here.
That's weird.
Yeah, so Spectrum's similar to the Yankees. Is the Spectrum made a deal with the Lakers and the Dodgers. So the Lakers and Dodgers have their own channel, their own TV channel, which just Dodgers and Lakers content all day. They have actually a really good show for each of the
just teams. Just like the Yankees, called, by the way.
Yeah, so they have a show called Backstage Dodgers or Backstage Lakers, where it's just behind the scenes content just all day. Which, like, I agree with you guys. I mean, that'd be awesome to see the Kings do something like that. I mean, obviously, it's a smaller demographic than we're talking about the Lakers and Dodgers, mm-hmm. where you probably won't get that many fans, as many fans as you would those teams. But even then, I mean, like, how many people still have cable, right? I mean, so I don't know. That's where it's like, oh yeah, that'd be cool to see them, the Kings, do something with Spectrum to have those type of channels. And yeah, it'd be tough to get those the same kind of viewership. But even then, like, not a lot of people really have cable in their homes still. So that's why I wonder if the Kings having their own app would be something. But it, I mean, you would have to figure there'd be quite a bit of a loss in revenue if they went that route, yep. though.
And the, if I got to remember another password, I don't know that I can do this anymore.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you think about it, what if it's
my wife asks, you know the Apple password? I said, I have no idea what our Apple password.
Yeah.
I have one of these five and it was, and I said, well, I'm gonna have to reset it.
I have like four passwords, and if somebody finds out that password, the main portion of it, and just fucks around with the numbers messes around with the numbers.
Yeah. Everybody across the country. I'm the same way. It's just in a different iteration of it that I can remember. My mind can comprehend.
I mean, I enjoyed Quarterback. I just watched the Johnny Manziel documentary. Hard Knocks is going to be on my list to watch tonight. You know, it's like I know it sounds dumb, but even if we had a 10-minute episode of Alex Turcotte working out this offseason, I'd be in for it. Like
yeah.
You know, it's like, that's just the kind of things that the Rabbit fans have. How many fans do you think the Kings have? 500K? Maybe
I don't know. I don't even know how it.
I don't even know how to guess that.
Yeah,
you know. So like, what is that? You know, at $10 a piece, that's still $5 million of revenue that you're getting. I don't know what the production cost with that would be. It's got to be less because you're not paying a middleman to broadcast your portion of it. You're not paying ESPN or whatever. So I don't know.
I think. Well, I think just to kind of put this into perspective, I believe I'm not 100% on this, but their last deal that they signed with Fox Sports before it became Bally's, I believe, was 10 years, and it was $250 million. So you're talking about $25 million a year that they probably have to figure out. And that was obviously 10 years ago, so mm-hmm. obviously inflation and whatnot. So probably looking to make a little bit more. But so that seems like $25 million a year.
That's for one team?
That's for the Kings? They signed the rights. That was the contract that they signed with Fox Sports. When they re-signed it. But yeah, so $25 million in a year for a hockey team to lose in broadcasting rights revenue, that seems like it'd be quite a hurdle to overcome.
But yeah, I'm sure you can still get ads though on your
own. You get ad revenue too from, like, let's say they did have their own app. I mean, there's still going to be TV breaks in hockey games, obviously. It's not going to just be commercial free, but I mean, I also agree with you, though, like what you said, Brandon, like backstage, like any behind the scenes content, the thing with hockey fans that I think even Trump's probably Dodger fans or Lakers fans out here is they're more passionate about the team. Sure, there's not as many as them, but hockey fans in general just love the team. And I think that it would also do a little bit of a service to market the players a little bit more, because you're not just seeing the players with their helmets and their visors. So their face is a little bit more obstructed, especially goalies. You get to see players like when they're off day or like behind the scenes, like you mentioned, like working out during the off season, that kind of fun stuff. So that would help increase the marketability of the players, not only the team as well. So, I mean, yeah, like Lieb just said, backstage Drew Doughty. Could you imagine like following around Drew Doughty for a day? Like stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. I feel like there could be a little bit more done with that. And I wonder if maybe that's a route that they look into when they get into this new rights deal that they're looking for.
This kind of is a little mini tangent, but I saw this on Twitter. I thought it would be interesting because it's kind of going in that direction, this conversation. Obviously, the first season of Quarterbacks just came out with, you know, Mahomes and Kirk and the quarterback from Mariota. And I enjoyed it. Like, it was good. You got to see some of the off-field stuff, a little bit of on-field stuff. What would there be a position group that you would want to follow for a season in the NHL?
Everybody should want to follow goalies.
That's what they, so they asked a lot of the NHL players and that was the overwhelming answer. Would there be three goalies that you'd want to follow for the season?
Almost any of them, probably. They're a unique being.
I feel like they wouldn't give you as much of like good content. It would just be like watching like a zoo animal, just not much communication, but like, dude, look at the stuff they're doing. It's crazy.
Possibly. Some of them would be like that, but imagine like a Marc-Andre Fleury, whatever that dude, if you've had a chance to see anything that he's done, mic'd up, like practices and stuff. Oh my God, it's gold. He's outstanding with that stuff. Like, and there's, yeah. So goalies would be where I would go to.
Dude, hockey players are characters, man. I mean, you go to the, you play, Joe, you're in these locker rooms. I mean, even just being around like beer league players like us, there's funny stuff that goes on. So, I mean, even like some of the terminology that hockey players use.
It is hilarious.
I'd love to watch stuff like that.
There's a reason why you ask anybody that's played hockey. Like if I were to be asked the question, like, what do I miss the most? They all say the same thing. The guys, the locker room. It's not even playing. It's the locker room. Like I could bring my bag to the rink, throw it down, sit in the room, and it'd be a great 3 hours. Just didn't have to put the gear on. Like it's now I do understand in today's environment that players are going to be a little afraid to open up and because God forbid if they say one thing remotely questionable, they're in trouble. So there's a huge risk there for them. So I can understand that part of it, but yeah, these are most of the time. I mean, listen, hockey players kind of they're a little less outgoing than others, I would say, but there's absolutely some characters in this league that, you know, again, Drew Doughty being one of them, that would be fantastic.
Asked about it and he said goalie should be the focal point. And then they asked him if he would be on and he said no.
remember that behind the scenes of the Winter Classic when that first came out with the Capitals and the Penguins? Yep. I mean, that was a huge hit.
Remember Brzgalov?
Yeah, Brzgalov, the humongous universe again, or whatever he said.
People got to see, like, yeah, like maybe he's a little more so than most goalies, but that's a goalie.
Bruce Boudreau pretty much became an icon and has been a TV personality ever since because of that series.
Yeah.
Like, look at what it's done. And I understand, like, and I don't even know if they've really done it anymore or they still do it, but one of the shows I didn't watch too is the Maple Leafs one that they did, I think, 2 years ago. That was on Amazon. I never got around to watching that one, but I love seeing these behind the scenes of these locker rooms because, yeah, the coaches are great and some of the stuff they say. And obviously, like we talked about the players. I mean, even on ice too. Like like the chirps like on ice. Like you keep it like PG or rated like PG-13 as much as you can. But
yeah,
I mean, Netflix let the expletive slide.
If you're gonna do some stuff like if it's a little bit more of an intimate setting, like it's in the training room or somebody's getting worked on or whatever, doing something else, it's one thing. But if you're like in the locker room, or more specifically on the ice, it has to be much less edited because so often you see these like mic'd up on like NBC or well, I guess not NBC now, like ESPN and TNT, and they hardly see anything because they've probably edited and muted it like 90% of it. But that's where a lot of the good stuff is.
Yeah. You know, it's so crazy that you brought it up, Joe, with the camaraderie and if anybody hasn't watched the Manziel documentary, I thought it was very insightful. But what he said, he's like, you know, when he ended up getting let go from the Browns, he said it just professional football was not like college football. College football, the team was my fraternity, and that was it, that's what I am. I'm not a football player. I'm a frat boy, and like the team was my fraternity. I was God for 2 years, and I just didn't want to play football. Like that football wasn't it for me. It was the camaraderie of being around the boys and being at the apex of being that icon in that stage, you know, and it was crazy. The amount of jerseys that he sold, the number 2 jersey for Texas A&M, sold over like 5 or 10 million jerseys in a matter of like 6 months. Like, could you imagine if you could get paid for your likeness then? Like, he would have been like $50 million, $100 million is what he probably would have made for Texas A&M. Absolutely nuts. Before we get into the Kings breakdown here of our first line, we're going to go over to our sponsors here at DraftKings. New customers, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code THPN. Just bet $5 and to score $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So we're going to be doing this, you know, leading up to camp, guys. We're going to be kind of breaking down the roster a little bit, as well as some other topics as they flow in, where certain players or certain pairings or a line as a whole, if we think they're going to be together next season, where they thrived, where they need to get better, or where they failed last season and where they need to get better. And then, you know, where do we kind of potentially see this breaking down into the 23-24 season? So we're going to start with the big boys. First line, first pairing today. Let's break it down here. Let's start with the first pairing. Let's go to the D-man. The Toothless Wonder, Drew Doughty, is the poster boy for this episode on the thumbnail. So let's break it down to there. First pairing, Drew Doughty and Mikey Anderson. Mikey Anderson just really recently signed the 8-year extension. Going to be here for a long time. So they're going to be paired together for this foreseeable future. Drew Doughty looked like he was back this year a little bit as far as from a point standpoint, play standpoint. Still play a lot of minutes. You got this defensive stalwart. Let's just start with the overall arch of what you thought this pairing looked like last season and where you find them maybe in comparison to the other top pairings in the league, Joe.
You know, I was looking at a lot of 5-on-5 numbers for Anderson Doughty, and it did two things for me. One, because at the top of every one of these lists, I did like minimum 200 minutes, so there was at least 20 games or so for a pairing to be together. It just continually reminded me of how wrong I was about Gavrikov, because him and Roy are at the top of, or among the top of, like every one of these expected goals or whatever it is, you name it. What I found with Anderson Doughty is, I don't know, a little meh, if you will, at least in terms of some of these metrics. I mean, this is not to tell the whole story, of course, but you know, if I look at just straight, you know, Corsi for that pairing, they're second on the team behind Gavrikov and Roy, and they're in like the 50s. They're outside the top 50 of pairings. I look at their expected goals for, they were third on the team as a pair behind Gavrikov, Roy, and also behind Durzi and Roy. They were 70th in the NHL. You keep going down, expected goals per 60. So one thing I've talked about is I get a little nervous about, is there enough offense coming from the back end? And I look at the, you know, the middle pair is a great shutdown pair, obviously, with Gavrikov, Roy. Doughty, Anderson, as a pair, were fourth on the Kings in terms of actual expected goals for per 60 minutes. So per their time on ice. Behind Gavrikov and Roy, behind Durzi. And Durzi and Roy were just not that bad. Like, no matter how we slice it, they really just weren't. They were also behind Edler and Walker in that. So my concern here, what I'm getting at is, you know, I think they're fine. I don't know. I think I said this a month or two ago that in my, you know, my hesitation with bringing Gavrikov back is because I wanted a more impact defenseman in the top four. And so while I understand bringing Gavrikov in, and him and Roy are clearly excellent together, I don't know if the top pair is, I don't know. Like, I don't think that they're an elite top pairing. You look at, I mean, if I were to look at the shot contributions that I did last year, they were sixth and seventh in goals per 60 on the team, by the way. Like, they're behind a lot of defensemen on their own team. Shot contributions per 60. The Kings have the bottom three defensemen in shot contributions per 60 on the team are all in the top four. Doughty, Anderson, Gavrikov. So it's like, this is where I'm kind of getting at. I just do get concerned if there's enough puck movers, if there's enough in terms of offense coming from the blue line, because let's be honest, I just don't think it's coming from the top pair. I think a lot of what Doughty did was, you know, was power play, which is fine. I don't know, you know, what his role is going to be this year, but you know, I don't know, maybe Anderson's got another level in terms of his offensive game. But obviously Doughty's getting a little bit old. I don't mean to say that this is not a good pairing or anything like that. It is a good defensive pair. It's a good pairing. is it one of the best top pairs in the NHL? It's, you could make an argument they're not even the top pair on their own team. So take that for what it is, I guess.
It's probably one of the more, it's weird, because I remember when we were talking about having this topic, and I tried to think, like, what are some, like, highlights or plays I can remember that involve Anderson and Doughty? And nothing really pops up to you. It's rare for those to happen with defensive pairs, but even then, it just feels like it's a pair that's just safe. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of dynamic playmaking ability. I mean, Drew is still probably one of the best defenders, or the best defender on the Kings still. Mike Anderson is not going to be this offensive juggernaut. He's one of the mm-hmm. better shutdown defenders in the league. And that's pretty much what this pair does, is they're probably like top 10. I think I looked at it, like, shot suppression in the NHL among all D pairs. So they do a really good job at playing defense. But even then, it's like, if that's going to be the only thing you're good at, and you kind of look at, like, the Edmonton Oilers series when they're just hemmed in their zone the whole time, then it's like, what are you really getting out of that pairing? So I don't know. It's just like, I wonder, like, if this is like a pair that's going to be solidified throughout the entire year. Like, I wonder,
wouldn't be surprised, like, if it's not.
Yeah, exactly. If you're maybe looking for, like, a little bit more of a shakeup, maybe a little bit more playmaking ability out of that top pair, hey, why not add, like, Brent Clark to pair with Drew Doughty, which we've seen at certain times toward the end of the game, just this past season. I mean, maybe we see that happen in certain situations in the games. But I wonder also, like, what would happen to that pairing with a full season of Gavrikov-Roy underneath them? Because mm-hmm. when you had Durzi Roy, I'm sure McClellan never really looked at that pair to be like, okay, I'm going to send that pair out against the number one unit of the opponent.
Good point.
They're probably more than likely looking at having that conversation with Anderson and Doughty, saying, like, okay, we need to have you guys going out there against the McDavids, the McKinnons, the Eichels, going up against that competition so that we can have Durzi be Sean Durzi or Alex Edler just kind of get minutes in just to ease up the defensive a little bit. So I don't know. It's just so I wondered if the having a solid top four now with Gavrikov in the mix helps them a little bit. And obviously with Pierre-Luc Dubois, you have a much better center depth too to help out with the forward core. But I'd like to see a little bit more dynamic offense from those two. And I don't know if maybe that's asking Mike Anderson to play outside his game, but maybe give Drew Doughty a little bit of more of a free rein, because we've seen Drew Doughty obviously do it throughout his career. And there were times even this past season when he showed a little bit of glimpse of having that skill in the offensive zone. So maybe you give him the opportunity and he can make things happen in the offensive zone.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I have been a big proponent of having Clark and Spence in the lineup, is just because there's, again, like I said, three of the bottom in shot, and I know shot contribution is not everything, but it's not nothing. The three of the top of the bottom three are in the top four for the Kings. So I, you know, none of those guys, you know, Doughty in his prime, but I don't even know how fair it is to ask of him to be, you know, a 60-point defenseman anymore, 50-point defenseman yeah. anymore. You know, I don't think we're going to see those days again. So to be able to sprinkle in, and like you said, maybe it's situationally, right, that you have Clark play up with Doughty in an offensive zone draw late in the game, something like that, to be able to offer different looks and to be able to offer a totally different skill set on that third pair than what it's very similar, the top two pairs, where there's not much going forward. Maybe to your point, Russ, with Gavrikov-Roy taking some of the heavier loads, that maybe it does free up Doughty to do a little bit more. It's entirely possible. But, you know, I think Doughty had a good season, especially when you look where he was a few years ago, where his game was. He had the bad injury the season prior. So, like, I have no issues with Drew Doughty's game right now. It's just, you know, I don't know how much better we can expect it to get. You know, he's getting older. Let's be honest. He just is. But, you know, and that's where I continue to have these kind of tug and pulls with the D-core. Is like, it's a lot of pressure on special teams. It's a lot of pressure on the forwards. If I just don't know how much offense they're going to get from the back end.
I think it's, I think the word you used, Russ, was comfort. And I think that's exactly what it was. The team going through a rebuild. Obviously, Drew Doughty's one of the biggest minute eaters in the league. They found another person that can pair with him and play the same amount of minutes and not be a detriment to the team. And that's kind of where you put it for me. Like, I don't there's nothing dynamic about them. They're just kind of they're doing their job at extremely high level, but they're not bringing anything extra to help from the back end offensively, like you said, Joe. I think that was one of the biggest proponents why we were so interested in Chychrun, and in not to bring that up again. But then you're getting offensive score on the second pairing as well, to where you're getting more blue line. And now if our team as constructed, really the third line is where you're going to get it from, right? And then those guys are playing 12 minutes a night or 14 minutes a night instead of the 20 minutes. So it's just something interesting there. And there's nothing wrong with the team. There's nothing wrong with the pairing, I mean.
Yep.
Let me ask you this. Mike Anderson signs a very lucrative contract for himself, also a very team-friendly contract. It just seems like he's the type of player to where if they ever did find somebody that was a real LD1, and I don't mean to sound that as snarky because he is an LD1, with the minutes that he plays, but a more offensive-minded left-handed left-shot defenseman, that he could still plug in and play it on the second pair and eat up a lot of minutes with his contract, and you're not really worried about a second shot left-hand D making $4 million a year. So, like, how does that contract kind of look going down the road to you, and does Mikey Anderson's role going from, minute eater 20 to 23 minutes a night to maybe a second pairing defenseman look on the Kings in the future?
Well, I'll switch it up on you. What if you get to the point where you have him playing with a more offensive capable RD1 as opposed to having Doughty? Maybe you have Doughty's contract's over. Maybe you play
his name rhyme with Bark.
Yeah, maybe you play him with Brandt Clark. I just like part of me like hopes that Todd McClellan doesn't have these defensive pairs like penned into his line of cards going into training camp. I want to see him experiment a little bit with some of these pairings. I mean, obviously that's what training camp's for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Preseason's for. Because if you kind of look at it, if you think about it, like as an opponent, you go up against Anderson and Doughty, yeah, they're going to be a handful in their own zone, like playing really good defense. Like we just read off some of the stats, but they're not going to be the burners countering attack on you going the other way. I mean, the Kings were always kind of relying on their forwards to be that transition style. Hey, let's get the puck up and you guys just go.
Yep.
And the defense will kind of just hang back and wait for play to develop. So that's where I wonder. I wonder if Mike Anderson gets eventually paired with a more offensive style defenseman as opposed to Doughty.
And I mean, the Clark train can make multiple stops there, Russ. And to any town, any port, pick up any defenseman that he wants to. He's a multifaceted machine.
And the counter to that, of course, is the – and this is not a Todd McClellan thing. This is an NHL coach's thing. They're very risk-averse. It'd be very easy for Todd McClellan to say he wants to do this. Yeah, give me more skill. Give me Clark. Give me Spence. Give me this. This is what I'm calling for. I'm going to listen to Joe. And then he goes like this, and he sees he's got Talbot and Copley. He's like, am I right? Is that a little risky? Maybe that's a little risky.
Exactly. So,
I imagine part of the reason that they're going with the goaltending they're going with is because they can trust the likes of Anderson, Doughty, Gavrikov, Roy, and play a solid defensive game, which they can do and likely will do. So I don't know. I think there's ways to involve more skill in the lineup. Like going back, Rand, it's about the top pair. I don't rank them very highly. And like when I look at the rest of the league and top pairs across the league, I don't know. Maybe they're the bottom half. Is that fair? Is that unfair? I don't know what you guys think.
Bottom half.
I mean, they're certainly not the worst, but like you look at teams that didn't even make playoffs, that their top pair is just significantly better.
Let me ask you this, Joe. Let me throw it around to you this way. Obviously, the penalty kill was horrible. They both play heavy penalty kill minutes. Is it a structure thing? Is it too many minutes for Drew Doughty in his older age? Like, where is that coming into as far as, obviously, we're not getting high offensive volume from them, mm-hmm. Russell saying they're high in shot suppression, so they are one of the better defenders on the ice. But you also need them to play quality minutes down late. Like, where is the PK time like come into this? And are we able to take them off that, knowing that our third pairing is going to be a couple green sprouts to the NHL?
Well, first of all, I would love to find a way to get Doughty some easier minutes. You know, he's a horse. I love it. Love everything about him and what he brings. But again, we can't fight it. He's getting a little older. And if he's playing 26, 27, 28 minutes a night, how does it not take a toll? Does that mean he doesn't play the penalty kill? Maybe. But I think Anderson for sure plays. I think Roy plays. I'm sure Gavrikov will play. And I'm expecting Andreas Englund to make the roster. I mean, it's August 10th, so Lord knows. I could be way off on this. But right now I'd say he's probably got the leg up, and he could see some penalty kill time. I just wouldn't be surprised if we see that in camp. I don't know if it ends up being the case. But I think you're right, Randon, that it'd be nice to trim some of those minutes. But if you're looking at the other options to kill penalties as the two kids, Clark Spence or Englund or Bjornfoot, McClellan's going to go with those top four guys. He almost
would has you, to. Would you switch it around and take Doughty off the power play? And that's where you trim his minutes. And then you have Clark and Spence as the power play runners.
I mean, I in theory, am comfortable with that, but in reality, don't at all expect that. I think the thing last year, what helped McClellan last year, perhaps, as you know, he could lean on Alex, and Alex Adler was not a bad penalty killer. So he could use Alex Adler, who's a third pair guy, to take off some of the burden from some of the top four, you know? So that is something that Adler provided to the team. And I think the penalty kill, I think a lot of the penalty kill was also goaltending. You know, I think they had the worst penalty kill save percentage last year. That's not to give a pass to the rest of it and maybe the structure, if you will. But I think the Kings.
So do you believe that to get better with the goalies that we have? Like, if the situation seems to be the same, then right?
Good question. That's a very fair question. So
can't get any worse, right?
Yeah, because I think the Kings were. I want to say the Kings were top 10 in either expected goals against or high danger chances against while shorthanded. So it's not as if they were leaking chances against, but they were all going in. So, you know, it's a good question. And that's one that obviously is going to be a big factor this season.
For an episode down the line.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I think it just in general, this team is going to rely heavily on their power play to score them a lot of goals. So special teams is going to be huge once again. I was just looking up the stats, and the Kings were 10th overall in total goals for the season, but they were 19th in 5-on-5. So like we were just talking about, the top four isn't the most dynamic in terms of playmaking capability from the defensive side. So, but if the power play could be what it was again last year, man, I mean, that's going to be huge for this team. So I wonder if the power play, and you're going to have Brant Clark or Jordan Spence or whatnot on the team, so I'm sure that'll help.
Let's flip it over to the forward group here. Our first line for the majority of the end of the season was Byfield, Kempe, and Kopitar. Fearless leader, winner of the Lady Bing right there, and then Kempe plotting that 40 goal skis there. Byfield coming up and made a successful transition to wing in the sense that I think he elevated that line for the first couple weeks, and then it kind of went stale, as some lines can tend to do. I guess I'll start this one off. Byfield is, I think, has probably the most pressure on him out of this line, playing first line minutes, drafted second overall. Where does the scoring come in for him? Like, there's got to be a point, I believe, where the results have to matter more than the process, right? He's still progressing. He's still young, so I understand that. But where does the results have to come in for you, Russ? Maybe he's frozen. Joe, you want to take this one?
Sure. I think you're right. I mean, at some point, there has to be some level of production. I don't know. Listen, I don't know what the number is. Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 30? You know, I think if he were to get 30, 35 points this year, I think while that would probably piss a lot of people off, it's still a big jump from where he was. I mean, I want him to be in that 40 to 50 range at this point. I think that especially playing with who he's going to be playing with. So I do think that's important. The one thing I'll say is that I don't know if you're asking about where the production comes from. I mean, he scored 30 goals once his second year in Sudbury. I don't know that this is a pure shooter. I don't know that's going to be. I don't know if he's ever going to score 20 goals or 25 goals. Maybe, and I'm going to let Russ. Russ had to, he's having some technical difficulties, but like Russ wrote a really good piece on Byfield, so I'm going to let him. I'm not going to steal his thunder. He did a lot of pointed out a lot of good things. So, but I think that playing.
Where do you where do you feel like he fits on this line? Like, where was he successful last year on this line? Where can that continue?
So I think that where it came in was he did a lot of the dirty work along the walls, and he was winning a lot of those wall battles. I think the one thing to keep in mind is, and Russ points it out in the article, like this line was excellent. And he was a big part of that line. Like there are statistics that show Kopitar, Kempe prior to Byfield. And they're much better with Byfield in terms of expected goals and zone time and all that stuff. So he was instrumental in being a factor on that line. And I think that's what worked for him is being that hard worker in on forechecks, always pressuring. He did a really good job with takeaways and stripping defenders of pucks and kind of allowing the play to continue, even if he didn't have like, maybe he didn't have a primary assist or maybe he didn't get any assists, but it was his play that kind of kept the play in the zone, kept the play alive type of thing. So I think that's where if he can do a lot of that, but I'm going to let Russ kind of talk much more. Cause again, like I said, he wrote a really good piece on QB today. So, I'll let him hop in here too.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Joe. If you guys didn't see, he wrote an article on Quint Byfield today. I'm just expecting a breakout season from him this year and kind of looked at a lot of the stats, during his time with Kopitar and Kempe, and it's a lot of bad luck associated with Quinton Byfield's game. Playing on that line. If you look at it, that line was fifth in the NHL in goals for percentage. I think we believe it was 42 games. And I believe they were also top five. I'd have to look at it, but top five in on-ice shooting percentage. But with Quinton Byfield, his individual shooting percentage was like 1.8 or 1.6, which is actually the lowest among all LA Kings players going back to 2007. Which is insane. And the counterpoint is Gabe Vilardi. It's funny because Gabe Vilardi actually had the highest shooting percentage of any Kings player going back to 2007. So I think there's a lot of bad luck that happened with Quinton Byfield. I remember, like, more specifically, I think there was a game against the Calgary Flames when Jacob Markstrom just absolutely robbed him, if I remember correctly, against in one of those games. But I mean, we saw that line start to kind of become a really formidable top line for the Kings that we hadn't seen in a few years. It had just been this revolving door of players just looking to find their way to stick on Kopitar's wing with Kempe on the other side. And we saw Fiala try to do it. That was no dice. Kaliev had his turn. That didn't work out. And even I think Trevor Morris had his time up there too. So with Quinton Byfield, if he could just figure out a way to just get the puck into the net, get those shots on net too, which is his shooting percentage or his missed shot percentage is pretty high too. I feel like we could see Quinton Byfield start to get a little bit more goals because the assists were there. The playmaking was there. You saw him do that alley-oop pass to Adrian Kempe against I forget who it was against, but I mean, plays like that. We started to see the confidence come out in Quinton Byfield's game a little bit more, especially playing with a player like Andre Kopitar, who can be quite intimidating. So if you have that confidence there, we'll see the goals start coming, and I think we'll see that line. I'm looking forward to that being a pretty explosive line for LA.
We had a fan ask us online, because knowing that the podcast was coming out, in all your research, did you hear anything about him changing a stick? Obviously, he was noted for having a shorter stick compared to his height. Is there any chance that had a factor in his shooting percentage? And Joe, you could talk about stick length and how that affects your shot. After Russell takes a stab out of here.
I'm not exactly sure, because I remember this being a conversation about Byfield. I believe it was before, not this past season, but the season before, about his stick length. And And obviously it's going to be hard for a player when you get up to a certain height like Byfield is to kind of navigate, as opposed to being a this young adult man, right? He's getting about 19 years old. He's only been like 6'5 for like a short time in his life. So to figure out how to play with that size can be quite difficult, something to overcome. So I don't know. I never really heard anything about him changing stick sizes or anything like that. I know that had kind of been brought to light a little bit. So maybe that's something I'll ask Quentin next time I see him. So I'm not sure. I don't think that really would affect his game. Maybe Joe knows more about that. So Joe, why don't you take the floor at?
Well, I can speak personally too from experience. Like, I was somebody that used a very short stick. I'm not 6'5", but like my stick was like below chest height, because, and I think if you go watch Alex Kovalev, how short his stick was. Those guys, you had your kind of your hands guys, your playmakers, if you will. More often than not, like, having a shorter stick allows you to control the puck better in general. Now, the times where I used a longer stick, just screwing around, like, it, my shot was way, because I didn't have a good shot with my short stick, my normal stick, but I did have a much better shot noticeably with a longer stick. So I do think, but you lose a little bit of that control, the puck control, if you will. So that's something where he's just going to have to figure out where's that balance, right? Because at the end of the day, the stick is going to help, but I just don't know, you know, as he gets stronger, he gets bigger, and depending on what he decides to do with his stick and his pattern, like, I the shot can get better. And I'll be curious to see how this looks come the off season. But if his style of play is more that, you know, we saw him going 100 miles an hour down the wing mm-hmm. to try to win a battle and set guys up, you know, I can see why he may like a shorter stick. It allows him to keep that puck a little bit tighter to him. He can be a little bit more creative with the puck, if that's what he's used to. Because think about it, if you're going like this, now you add a longer stick, it's if the puck is just that far, just that much different from where you used to stick handling it, you're trying to make that adjustment, and you're trying to make that adjustment at that level. Yeah, no, that's going to take an off season's worth of time to put in a preseason if he's going to change the length of the stick, I would imagine. That's not easy for everybody, especially such a young guy growing into it.
The curvature of the blade would probably
that too, I mean, for sure.
Yeah, that has more of an effect on that than the length of the stick, I would feel like, of a shot. I mean, I've gone from different curved blades before.
Yep, and absolutely.
I use the Stamkos curve myself. It's not as I don't like that heavy curve, because I feel like it just, I get no backhand from it, and it's just terrible.
If I could use a straight Crosby curve, I would. I tried to get the most boring middle, because that's what I could control pucks with. I could stick handle with it. I could make passes with it. I wasn't a shooter. I wasn't a goal scorer. I was a playmaker. I tried to set guys up. So again, if he, like I said before, Randon, like, he did score 30 goals in his second year in Sudbury in the OHL, and he had high 20s the season before. So he's capable, but at this level, it just depends. I don't know who he sees himself as. And again, the stick length and even the stick pattern, it's not everything, because if he himself in his mind is like, he's a playmaker first, he's a passer first, or, you know, he has that vision, whereas it's not get the puck, shoot the puck, like an Adrian Kempe. Yeah. Some guys are just that built that way. So part of that's just going to depend on who he is. That said, I think he can be productive regardless, right? Whether he's scoring 15 goals and picking up 35 assists, that works. You know, that'll do it. I think that's valuable. And hopefully,
will Juice help your boy out, man? Juice needs to help his boy out and give him the number to his shooting coach, because it's worked for.
I remember seeing that at practice when it was Kempe, Byfield, and Kupari all just shooting drills at the end of mm-hmm. practice, and they did it a couple times toward the end of the season, and that was probably because Quentin Byfield just couldn't hit the net in a lot of his shots. I feel like Adrian Kempe is a perfect example of a player kind of learning and growing into the shot, because I never expected Adrian Kempe to have this booming one-timer that he has now, or even this wrist shot that he exudes now. So, I mean, that seems like a perfect type of player to learn from, because for that line specifically, I feel like one of those other players has to have a little bit more of a shooting mentality, and it can't just be Kempe, mm-hmm. because Kopitar obviously has never really been a shoot first type of player. And if Byfield's going to have that same mentality that Kopitar has, you can't just have one player who's expected to shoot the puck, even if it is Adrian Kempe. I'd love to see him get 60 goals. That'd be great. But there's got to be a little bit more of a scoring presence there too.
Where he can make some of his money scoring goals, though, will be different. He doesn't have to score the Kempe goals from yeah. the dots out, who he's going to laser one past the goaltender. He could be the guy that makes the pass. Maybe he tips something in. Maybe he's there for a rebound. Right. Maybe he pops home something like that. I think, you know, those count just as well, you know? So I think that could be an avenue. Like, I just, and again, to that point,
there's been plenty of those last season where he was right next to the net and you're like, oh, he just missed it.
Exactly.
Oh, he just missed it.
And that isn't necessarily shot strength or anything like that. Right. That could either be mental, it's in your head, or that could be reacting a little too quickly, whatever the case may be. But as he gets more of those opportunities, they'll start to go in. I mean, will he ever be a guy that's a 13-14% shooter? Maybe not. But if he can, at least, what was it, Russ, in the article?
1.8%.
Okay. So if he can get up to like 7, what's league average? Is it like 7?
Around 9, 8? I think.
Okay, yeah. So even if he's 7, he's a little below league average. Imagine what that's going to do with a full season playing with that top line. I mean, you're going to mm-hmm. see him jump quite a bit in terms of goals. So I I'm a believer in that. Like, I'd be more concerned if he wasn't getting those opportunities. I know that's coach speak, I think, sometimes, where it's like, you know, he's not producing. I'm like, but I'm more upset if he's not getting those chances. I'd rather him get those chances, and I'm pulling out my beard hair because I have nothing on my head. Because why didn't that go in? It'd be much more of a concern if it's like that Edmonton series, he looked outmatched. There's a reason why they moved him down, which, again, not a shock at his age in that series, but hopefully that helps him in this offseason. You know, he's been able to put together a good one. And I think it's an exciting time for Byfield.
Do hockey players get the yips?
Sure.
Like on breakaways and stuff? I mean, obviously Austin Wagner had it, but do other hockey players get the yips?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's mental, you know, and think about, like, which, and I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, because when Alec Martinez scored the cup-clinching goal on the rebound there, it's obviously an easy play, right? The shot comes from the right side, Lundqvist kicks it out, the old pass off the pad, bang, goal. But you put yourself in that spot, like, it's very easy to fan on that. And you've seen guys do it 100 times, or put it back into Lundqvist, or put it off the post, because especially for a defenseman who's not like always in that spot. So like you think you take some stuff for granted about how, like, you know, that's a mindset. That's a focus. He's so focused. Nothing was. And I think that happens sometimes where it can get into guys' heads more so than others. I have no idea if it bothered him, right? If that stuff weighed on him, if it's like, or if he just is able to let it roll off. I don't know him, but yeah, some guys, sure.
I mean, when that line was playing together, the team was playing some of its best hockey it had in years. So I'm sure a little bit easier when the team's winning a lot of games. And I thought Todd McClellan had a perfect comment about Quint Byfield's game. I forget which game it was after, but he talked about how, yeah, even though he's not scoring, he's doing all the other things right. And that's what we want to see first and foremost. He can score a ton of goals, but if he's not playing the entire game the way we want him to play, then there's something missing there. But we never saw that for Quint Byfield. Because everything we wanted to see, I mean, obviously playing on the first line is a little bit more pressure, and he kind of took that head on and played really well. So I'm just really excited to see what he can do for an entire season, or who knows if it is an entire season, but just the start of the season, to see what he can do on that top unit. And also who does that unit match up against? How does McClellan utilize that unit? Does he use them more as like a shutdown type unit going up against the other units, top lines, or does he give them a little bit more of an offensive style opportunities, right? Offensive zone draws. as opposed to those defensive zone draws that we always see Andre Kopitar take countless times. So now you have, this is what bringing in Pierre-Luc Dubois does, right? Is it gives you that extra pivot down the middle so you can open up those opportunities for Andre Kopitar to get more scoring chances.
I think let's switch it over to the juice man himself, Kempe. Back-to-back seasons, putting plenty of pucks in the net. Is it just lather, rinse, repeat for him this season? Is it just keep up what he's doing? Or is there a part of his game that you'd like to see a little bit of an improvement on?
I mean, we saw Adrian Kempe unlock a new part of his game during the playoff series against Edmonton last year. I thought we started to see Kempe become more of an all-around type player and not just a pure goal scorer that we've seen these last two seasons. So I was really impressed with what we saw in those six games against Edmonton. So who knows?
Could you elaborate on that? Because all-around player is kind of a vague term. What facets of this game are you referring to?
More involved in winning stick battles, not just looking for open spaces on the ice to sit in shooting position, hunting down loose pucks, playing more evolved in the defensive zone. Those kind of things that you want to see from a player on the top line, not just being that pure goal scorer who's just going to sit in the circle and wait for a one-timer any chance he gets. We saw him kind of take on some of those characteristics that we had seen this whole time from Andre Kopitar in his career, play that more of a two-way style game as opposed to just pure offensive threat. I really liked what I saw in Kempe's game, and maybe he can grow into that a little bit more.
Yeah, if that line kind of plays the way that they did right from the jump, and if Byfield's able to be a little bit more productive and be as creative of as a caliber player that he is, I mean, and it's not like Kempe had like this off the charts shooting percentage. Like, he shot 12% at 5-on-5. That's not crazy. Like, it's conceivable to see Kempe have a season where he spikes like an 18% shooting percentage and he gets to, you know, 45, 50 goals. Like, that's in the realm of possibility. You know, it's obviously not the likelihood or the high probability, but yeah, you have to just love what he's doing. I mean, he is north, south, give me the puck and I'm going to shoot it. And he's did a hell of a job of that last year. I'd give me that same season from Kempe.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Let's switch it over to the captain here. Anze Kopitar, obviously we talked about him and his game when he signed the extension. But what did we see from his game last year? Is it the same old steady Eddie Kopitar? With his new line and having, obviously we've been talking about needing to get him a great scorer. We thought it might've been Fiala. It ended up being Kempe again this last year. Now we have Byfield there. How does that line look and what is his role within that line? Is it him being kind of that small forward where he can do a lot of stuff in the middle and facilitate to Kempe? Is he going to have to take on a new role as Kempe kind of grows into his own? Like, where do you see him fitting here long-term now that line is probably going to have a little bit more data behind it, so to speak?
I mean, I would just hope that they play the same type of game that they played toward the end of last season. The one thing I'll be looking at is how Todd McClellan utilizes those three with PLD in the system now. So, I mean, with Kopitar, it was ho-hum, right? Same kind of season. He's finally playing on a competitive team with some really good talent on his wing. Yeah, so Lady Bing Trophy. I don't know when Kopitar will eventually retire. He could be 45 years old and keep playing. It's that type of game that he plays, right? It's like not the flashiest, it's not the most speedy, but for some reason, he just always seems to make things happen, whether it be in the offensive zone and definitely in the defensive zone as well. So I would expect it to be the same type of season from Kopitar, and maybe even better as opposed with Pierre-Luc Dubois and some more offensive talent, maybe defensive talent around him too.
It is not surprising that he's the son of a coach. That's why he's still so good, Russ. I mean, his brain on the ice is as good as it gets. And I think that's why when you see some of these guys, Bergeron's another one. And I don't know, they're always linked, they're always compared. But when you see these guys that, yeah, they're not blazing speed or anything like that. And especially Bergeron, who's a little bit smaller, yet they just dominate both ends of the ice. They're steps ahead of everybody. And I think that's, you know, Kopitar is able to have the game's got to be in slow motion for him sometimes, the way he can see the play, see the ice, and see the way things happen, know exactly what he's going to do when he gets the puck. He knows exactly where his options are before he gets the puck. He just set it and forget it with him. I mean, it has been an absolute pleasure watching this guy play hockey for how long has it been at this point? How many years has it been?
This will be his 18th.
18th, right? It was 05, right? I think. Something like that. It is whatever it is. It is. I mean, we've been spoiled for how good he's been. And like you said, Russ, it's like you're just kind of waiting. Like, is it ever gonna like get worse?
Yeah. I remember toward the beginning of last year, people were wondering, like, he had a little bit of a slow start, and people were like, I wrote an article talking about his slow start and how, don't worry about it, he's just not shooting the puck as much as he should. And everyone's like, oh, old age is finally catching up to him. And then sure enough, Lady Bing trophy is on his mantle now. So yeah, just kind of wait and see and just enjoy the ride while we're here.
And it's not unlike Doughty. Hopefully they find ways with the strength now down the middle that this team has to ease up on his minutes a little bit. I know we kind of talk about that a lot, and maybe we're overdoing it a little bit, but it really does feel like an opportunity for these two guys in particular, Doughty and Kopitar, to, part of that's on the other guys too. Like, you have to, like, McClellan's got to be able to count on those other guys to play them in those minutes. I mean, you could still have Kopitar, Doughty in the big minutes, right? In the final minute of a game or whatever it is. But it's
in games you're up, 4-1 or you're getting blown out. Like, that's where you can save the legs, I think,
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying Pierre-Luc Dubois $8.5 million a year. You're not going to be playing him 15 minutes a night.
Mm-hmm.
But expect him to be up close to 18 to 20 minutes a night. And obviously, Deneau is still there too, who's no slouch playing high minutes. So,
yep.
Yeah, give Kopitar a break. Take him off the penalty kill.
If you bring, I mean, the tougher part is with Doughty. Okay. Like with Kopitar, yeah. I think it makes more sense to bring, I don't know what he averaged last year on ice, but if it was like 22 minutes, 23 minutes, if you bring that down to even 20, I think that could go a long way. Doughty's tougher because we talked about the decors. They don't have the guy to like just step in. I don't know. And take those minutes from Doughty,
His time on ice last season was 20.18. So it was lower than I thought.
Yeah. Okay. Is that all situations or 5-on-5? That's probably all situations. Yeah. But okay. Then if you knock that down a minute or two, and allows Dubois and Deneau to be a little bit, to spread that out a little bit, I just think that'll help. Maybe not. Again, it's a less of a deal, I think, with Kopitar. They kind of need Doughty to play those minutes. I mean, just given the way the decor is structured. But
I think the way you could is the time, like you mentioned. I think it's even maybe less minutes, but the type of minutes he's getting. More offensive zone faceoffs rather than the harder zone all the time. But being able to utilize the quote unquote easier minutes, getting the puck and getting more scoring opportunities. Maybe that might just lessen the blow on the knees.
My fan is coming out of me. I mean, I'm just envisioning like the team's on the road, and the other coach is like wondering like, okay, I have my top unit. Who am I going to send him out against? Is it going to be Kopitar? Is it going to be Deneau? Or is it going to be Pierre-Luc Dubois? Is it going to be Blake Lizotte? I mean,
because
this is easily the deepest this forward core has ever been on the Kings in quite some time.
It's because of the centers, but also like because who are you trying to shut down? You're going to try to shut down the 40 goal scorer in Kempe, or you're going to try to shut down the guy who's probably going to lead the team in points in Fiala. You have to make that decision. It gets tough. Yeah, and then
Coneheads and Deneau, Arvidsson, and Moore. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's fun. It's going to be fun to watch this forward core, and just hopefully the goalies and the defense can keep up with them.
Yeah, and I want to add one other thing because, Russ, you had alluded to it earlier. The Kings were the fourth most reliant on the power play last year in the NHL. This is per Quant Hockey. I love that they do this, by the way. they scored 24.8% of their goals were scored. So a quarter of their goals were scored on the power play last year. Only three teams were higher than that.
Edmonton? So
Edmonton is one of them.
Good guess. I don't see the power play getting any worse.
I don't, but I agree.
Especially if you have like Clark and Spence in the lineup.
Yeah, I think it just leaves little margin for error. Yeah. And like it's easy to like you look at the top power plays that were power play reliant, I should say. It was Ottawa, Edmonton, Tampa. You don't ever have to worry about Edmonton's power play going stale, really. You don't really got to worry about Tampa's power play going stale. That's been dynamite for years. You know, Ottawa with Stützle, the way he played, Tkachuk. We'll see with DeBrincat out now if you know, but they're getting Tarasenko. Now they're going to have Chychrun. They've got Chabot. They're pretty well loaded up there. You know, the Kings, they've added a lot more skill to this lineup, but it's still a, you know, I think it's still a lot of pressure. Like, I think they're a top 10 power play. They're certainly capable of doing that again. I think last year they're a top five, and even if they got room to come back a little bit, but hopefully Dubois adds a lot more 5-on-5 scoring too, right? That's the point where that offsets some of that. So,
well, it'll be interesting to see. You know, we got the big boys coming up. Like I said, we're going to be doing the series, going breaking down the lineup here and there, as well as some of the newbies. But thank you guys for listening in. You guys in the chat have been always awesome as always. You guys find us at @hockey_royalty, at @randomcommando24, at @NHLRussell, JW Paterino, Kopitar for HOF. If you're looking to follow some of that rain coverage with Kyle, go on our website and read that new article written by yours truly, or Russell Morgan. I don't know why I said yours truly. I don't write very many. I've written one article about Hiracek, my man crush, and that's been it. But go ahead and read that article at hockeyroyalty.com. Keep a look out for gear. And we got some articles pumping out. We're going to be getting some more episodes going in. But again, appreciate you guys in the chat. And as always, on this podcast, go Kings, go.